Good morning. Welcome to Genesis. We are really glad you're here. And I have a cool announcement to share with our church. I'm really excited about this. We're about 5 years old, a little over 5 years old as a church. And for the first five plus years, the church office was the front room of my house. And my wife has been dying to have a dining room. But more than that, not only has it been in our house, when we did anything that wasn't Sunday morning here, we had a hard time figuring out where to go with it. And just having an identity and a place in the community. Well, I'm here to announce that this last week on December 1st, we signed a lease to have an office suite. It's a really good deal for us on several levels. First of all, this suite has a room that's big enough for groups of 20, 30 people or so. Even with tables, it'll be a nice big room for just celebrations, meetings, parties, anything that community groups or individuals would like to do. If you're part of our church and you'd like to use the room for something like that, we're more than willing to allow people to use that. And then it's going to have four offices or four rooms that they're going to be offices. And so we'll move the copy machine and all that stuff. We're going to move me out, and my wife is going to get her room back. But it's also just going to provide so much for us, and we are so excited about this. But it's a pretty raw place. In other words, it was used by other offices recently, which means we've got to do some sprucing up and cleaning up. It's not dirty. It needs a coat of paint and another coat of paint and a coat of primer. And, you know, it needs just a little bit of sprucing up. We are also going to move our stuff. We are renting a storage building facility. It's actually in the same complex. And we're going to move our storage stuff into one of the rooms. It'll save us $75 a month, and we can use one of the rooms. There'll be a bigger area for our creative team, who has been storing all this beautiful Christmas stuff in that room for the last several months, or last 12 months, actually, I guess. And all the other stuff that we just kind of keep in storage. And we're going to need some help. And so there's two ways you might think about this. Way number one is if you, hey, we want to do a family mission day. Just let us know. We'll turn you loose in there with paintbrushes and all that stuff. We'll tell you where to paint and give you direction. Then you can help us paint or do some other cleanup. We're also, and we don't have dates yet for this, but we will be putting a few dates out there on the calendar so that we can have like whole church days. So like maybe from 8 in the morning till 5 at night, we'll say, we're going to come up here and you can come up for any time you want. You can come up for an hour, 2 hours, 8 hours if you want, to help us do some of this stuff. We're going to try to get this all done and painted, and we're going to start, you know, stocking it with tables, chairs, and couches, and make it a really nice place for us. Our goal is sometime in January to have an open house then, where we just invite everybody in church to come up and just kind of celebrate God's goodness and our identity in the community in a kind of a place. We're going to get to have a sign on the outside of the building that will be lit. Whereas people are driving up and down Fifth Street, they will, you know, hopefully see our sign and see Genesis Church meets at Eureka High School, offices here, kind of thing. So it's just a really exciting thing. And while making a formal announcement, it is a praise and something to rejoice about as a church. And so it's just an exciting day for us, all right? Christmas is a time of stories. I don't know about you, but part of the fun of the Christmas season is all the stories, and especially the fact that in the stories, Hollywood does such a great job of making stories that flow from the heart and the meaning of Christmas. And so, I don't know about you, but one of the great traditions of our household is that we have several movies and several Christmas stories that it's just like we have to find a time during the holiday to watch these, okay? Now, if you're like me and getting older, you even remember back when it was all claymation and how hideous that really was now. You look at it like, have you gone into like, you go into Walmart, and Walmart has those old shows, and for a moment you're like, $5, I can spend $5 because my kids will love this. I remember how much I loved Frosty the Snowman and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and they were so meaningful to me, my kids will love it. And you get home and watch it, you're like, wow, this is bad. Have you had that experience yet as an adult? I have. I was so disappointed when I watched them again. I remember as a kid, it was like all about this. And of course, one of the things, there was an old show that had the story of Mary and Joseph in claymation, and, you know, the donkey walking, you know, the clay donkey walking and Mary on the back and all that. And you remember the stories. Well, as it's come along, obviously there's a lot of other shows and movies. Who can beat Charlie Brown? I mean, maybe the best of all time. And of course, there are some great movies like, of course, Christmas Vacation and What are some others? What movies do you like? It's a Wonderful Life. I can't believe that came out of the first front row in the youth. I heard, what else? Christmas Story. You'll shoot your eye out. Miracle on 34th Street. See, there we go. The youth are throwing out the classics. That's amazing. They're cultured. Steve's like, I'm not a youth. I'm up here leading them. Back off, all right? And of course, there's Elf. You know, and the humor of that. If you haven't seen it, do. Just a thought. Hilarious movie. I find it very funny. And believe it or not, I'm not a real big Will Ferrell fan. But that movie makes me laugh, and I really enjoy the meaning of it in the story. But there's just something about these stories that the message of Christmas in Jesus, even people who don't believe in Jesus, it filters into meanings and messages that the world really does love and embrace. The idea of love and grace and truth and something bigger to live for and those sorts of things. Well, Will Ferrell's made several movies, and one he made is not a Christmas movie, but I remember watching it several years ago and found it to be very fascinating. The name of the movie is Stranger Than Fiction. And in the movie, Will Ferrell, the basic premise of the movie is that Will Ferrell's character, and I have his name written down here, Harold Crick, is going about living his life when all of a sudden he begins to hear a voice in his head. And at first, of course, he thinks he's crazy. The first time he hears it, he's brushing his teeth. And he hears a narrator narrating his life in the back of his head. And the way the movie tells itself, it's really curious. What's going on is that there is a lady who is writing a novel where Harold Crick is the main character in the novel. And he begins to realize that something is going on where somebody is kind of narrating his life, but also directing the direction of his life. He's standing on a street corner one day waiting for a bus to come with a big group of people, and the voice starts talking, and he hears the voice basically say, Harold Crick led a boring, uninteresting life, which makes it such a shame that he had to die. And all of a sudden he's going, what? And all the people around him are going, what's wrong with you? Let's check you into mental hospital. What do you say? Why do I have to die? But what's really interesting about the movie is it's this merging of the fact that this person is writing a story, but the person is true. He actually calls her on the phone and says, why do you want to kill me? She's like, who are you? I'm Harold Crick. And she kind of faints and passes out. They meet. But the gist of the story is really curious, really weird, really interesting. As this person begins to realize that Harold Crick thought he was going about his life, just living his life, and it was his own little story. And what he didn't realize was that there was a greater story that was being written around him and about him as he was living out his story. And the reason that's important this morning is because as we enter Christmas, we're going to talk about the story. Not just a story, the story. And of course, in the middle of that story, we have the birth of Jesus, the coming of Jesus. But in the Bible, the big idea is that the Bible is a big, what people call a meta-narrative, a great story, a grand story that is bigger than any individual story in the Bible. We have a tendency, like at Christmas, we have a tendency to read about the manger and the baby and the shepherds and the wise men and, you know, the donkey taking Mary to Bethlehem, which the Bible doesn't tell us that happened, but we assume it. We come up with all these ideas, and we kind of take this story. We get enamored with this little story, and it's cute, and it's cuddly, and it's precious, and it's beautiful. It's amazing how our world will run to that and then pretty much reject the rest of the Jesus story. And we come to Christmas, and you hear Christmas sermons. If you've been in church all your life, I'll tell you as a pastor, it's one of the interesting things is when you come to Christmas, how do you re-spin the story? Not that you have to re-spin it, but you get it every year. It's like, all right, we got to do a Christmas series. What's the Christmas series going to be on? It's going to be about baby Jesus, of course. How are we going to preach that? Every year you come in, and it's kind of like reworking that story, and we get kind of in the small story, and we see the cute and cuddliness, but this is what we want to do this Christmas. And Weston and I have been crafting this series together. We've been working together to kind of figure out what this looks like. What we want to do is we want to take that little story and hop in an airplane and see the story from 30,000 feet. We want to look not at the little story alone. We want to look at the big story, the grand narrative, the great story of the Bible. And how we're going to do this is going to be a little bit different. We're not going to preach out of Luke and Matthew and the birth narratives or even the prophecies in the Old Testament. We're actually going to look at some of the really cool stories of the Old Testament, all right? And we're going to talk about stories like the creation this morning, and David and Goliath, and maybe the Tower of Babel, and some of these stories in the Bible that if you grew up in church, you probably heard some of these stories growing up, and you heard the story told something like this, that there's a problem, and then there's this person who's really courageous who comes along, and he's the hero of the story, and somehow if you can be like that person, or you can be more faithful, or more courageous, or more worshipful, or whatever it is, you can be like David, you can be like Abraham, you can be like Joseph. I just want to let you know that without being rude, people who preach the Bible that way miss the point. And so what happens is in the Bible, there is a cool story, and it's a story with wars and love and a person who is the hero and adventure and struggle and pain and hardship and victory. It's a story with all these things. But at the end of the day, in the Bible, there's actually only one hero. And every story of the Bible is retelling or leading us to the story of Jesus. It's unpacking the big story and taking us to the birth of Jesus. And so in the story, there's themes. Just like any story has, there's themes, and there's four great themes. In our series, we're going to look at each one of these four themes for 1 week. But I want you to learn these themes and get them in your head, okay? Start learning. This is the theme of the grand narrative, the big story of the Bible. The theme is, first of all, creation, that God made everything and that it was perfect and beautiful as the way he designed it. And he is the designer. He is sovereign over it. I mean, it's his world. He's the creator. And we are part of that. We are creatures. We're not the creator. We are created, which means God made us and he loves us. And we heard Alex tell the story to the kids this morning of how God, as he created everything, we as people are the crown of that creation. And God loves us because he created us. But then something happened to the story. There is a plot twist as people are fallen. We are rebels. We have entered, brought sin and brokenness into God's perfect creation. And now we look around the world and we say, man, it's a great place, but it's not like it should be. There's something wrong. There's something amiss in this story. And what happens is that we need a rescuer. We need a hero to step into our story, to rescue us, to pull us out of the mess that we're in, to be, and you can think any Disney princess movie of the rescuer who comes rescue. I mean, my kids are now into Tangled. If you haven't seen that one, it's another one of the Disney princess movies, and they've promised it's the last one. I don't believe them, but they've promised it's the last princess movie. But here this guy character comes in and rescues her out of her situation. Well, we love the stories of rescue. And in the great story of the Bible, there is a hero who comes to rescue. And the rescue comes with the promise that that hero will make everything right, that he will make the world as it is. Now, that's the big story: creation, fall, rescue, restoration. That's the big story. But here's what happens. As you read the Bible, every single small story, including the birth narrative of Jesus, retells the big story in a way. It retells that story that you have people who are God's people. God loves them. They are his, but they are in a situation they cannot find their way out of. And God rescues them. He redeems them out of that situation, and usually in a way that we didn't see coming. There is a hero that comes in and becomes a picture of this big story who rescues God's people, and then he makes things right again so that their life, their world, their nation, their lives are restored. And the story is retold in minuscule. But the reason this is what's going on in the Bible is this: that big story of the Bible, creation, fall, rescue, restoration, is the little story of the Bible. And every story, there's the themes of creation, fall, rescue, restoration. And here's why: because the Bible wants that to be your story. The Bible wants the big story that is echoed in every little story to be your story. And there are only two basic human stories. There is the story of creation, fall, judgment, or the story of creation, fall, rescue, restoration. Either we are fallen people who will not let the hero rescue us and save us from ourselves and the sin and the brokenness around us. And then we will stand before God guilty, and we will stand before God in judgment, or the story will take place in our lives. And my hope is that during this series, that first of all, that will happen for you. You will understand this. And if you're not a follower of Jesus, that you will realize that what God wants to do is he wants to enter your story. He wants to be that great narrator who leads your life and gives you a bigger story around the little story that is your life. And he wants to make that story your story. But at the same time, our hope is that you will begin to share that story with others. As Christmas is a great time where people are curious. And we have some really practical things we're going to do as an outwork of that, okay? And so this morning, we're going to deal with that first theme, the theme of creation. The fact that God created everything and the beginning of the world, the beginning of the story of God, the beginning of the story of all that is begins with, in the beginning, God. That's where it starts. It doesn't begin with, and hear this clearly, it doesn't begin with, in the beginning, you. Or me. We've got to get that straight. In the beginning, God, the story begins with him. And so if you have a Bible, find Genesis chapter 1. I can guarantee you it's on page 1 because it's the very first words of the Bible. Genesis chapter 1. We're going to look at a few things here. And Alex has already told you the story in such a beautiful way. I'm going to kind of pull some things out of that. And then we're going to talk about how this great story of the Bible and the theme of creation is told. And here's the big idea. Every week, what I want you to learn is that in every story, on every page of the Bible, in every issue, in every situation, there is, in the pages, I want you to know, in the pages of Genesis chapter 1, there is the echo, the backdrop, the sound of a baby in a manger crying. Every page of the Bible is trying to show us that this leads us to the coming of Jesus, the Christmas story, the incarnation where God becomes a man and is going to be our great rescuer. And so as you think about the baby in the manger and the cute little nativity scenes and all the Christmas stories that go with it, realize that's the climax, that's the pinnacle point of this great story. But everything leads us there. Okay? And so Genesis chapter 1, we'll read the first 5 verses, kind of unpack some things that are going on here, and then get down to the creation of humanity, and we'll talk about that. It says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the water. So it begins with, in the beginning, God creates it, and there is it's not complete. It's not finished kind of feel to it. And so verse 3 says, God said, let there be light. And there was light. I want you to notice that the way God chooses to create all that exists except us, and I'll get that in a minute, is through the power of what he says. Through the power of what he says. Here, God is not creating with his hands. He's creating with his mouth. He's creating with his speech. Here's why this is so important. We tell you all the time that this book is the word of God, that God has spoken this into existence. If God can say, let there be light, and light happens, and this records the content of his speech, we can stand up here and tell you there's power in this book, as God has spoken. And God said, let there be light, and it was, and it happened. And it goes on to say, and God separated the light from the darkness, and God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And God said, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from waters. And God made the expanse and separated the waters that were under the expanse from the waters that were above the expanse, and it was so. And God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening and morning, the second day. And what we begin to see is a rhythm. And as the story goes on, there's a rhythm of God creating. He creates by saying something. It comes into being. What God says happens. And every time God creates, it happens. And then God begins to make a declaration. And the declaration he begins to say is, and it was good. That God says everything he makes is good. There's beauty, there's wonder, there's amazement in it. And God makes everything. And all of a sudden, everything that exists comes because God willed it, God desired it, God created it, he wanted it, and it flows from his character, the beauty, the majesty, the wonder of our creator. Everything in the story comes from that. And as we read the Bible, we read this story, we read the whole Bible, and the Bible keeps speaking back and talking about creation. Psalm 19 says, the heavens declare the glory of God. The ground, the earth shows his beauty day after day. In Psalm 139, it says, you, in this ingenious way, you knit me in my mother's womb. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And what the Bible begins to tell us is that out of creation, it's teaching us about our God and our existence on this earth. And in Colossians chapter 1, it tells us that everything was made by him, through him, for him. And what this is teaching us is this. The first of all, we as people, but not just we as people, everything in this in God's creation finds its owner in him. Finds its owner in him. In other words, there is not one inch of God's creation that does not have the imprint, the stamp that says that it is God's. We are his. We want to be independent people who live for ourselves. I own my life, but you don't. And as long as we live that way, there's a disconnect. That's part of the disconnect that we call sin. You were created by God, and he literally, the imprint of ownership on your life is his. In the movie Crocodile Dundee 2, I know that goes way back, but in the movie Crocodile Dundee 2, there's a scene where Crocodile Dundee and the girl, and I don't remember her name, it doesn't matter, are walking along in the Australian outback, and she asks him, what's the name of this place? And she kind of looks at everything, and I mean, you just know we're talking about a huge, huge expanse of land. And she says, what's the name of this place? And he said, the name of it is Belong to Mick. And she said, what? Belong to Mick. And she goes, well, what's that name? Is that like an Aborigine term? He goes, no, that means it's Mick's place. I own this. I want you to tell you the first thing we learn when we see the Bible story that God speaks, it is that God is creating that everything in the universe says belong to God. It's God's. He created it. It's created by him, but it's also created through him, which means everything finds its value in him. That the worth of creation is not independent from the creator. A few months ago, I took Heidi and we went on a date. And I planned the date. It's a good idea, guys, when you surprise your wife and plan a date. And I did something that was a little out of the ordinary. We went down to Forest Park and ate dinner, and then I took her to the art museum, which is way outside of my normal thing. But it was really interesting as we walked through the art museum. And you see some of the stuff, you're like, really? How does this end up on the wall in an art, you know? Modern art, I'm one of those weirdos that don't get it, okay? I'm just letting you know. But there are also works of art that you stood there. And not only was it awe-inspiring, but you were literally pulled into the work of art. And you would pause and you would look at it and you would just go, man, amazing. Wow. There's beauty in this. And what happens is you're staring at this. You need to realize that all that is there is a piece of canvas that was probably not very expensive and some paint that has a little bit of value, but not much. That's all that's there. What makes it valuable? The answer is the one who created it. The one who pulled a brush and had skill and beauty and giftedness to put on a canvas something that is amazing. And if you understand art correctly, as you look at this, you awe in the work, but you have greater awe for the one who made it. I want you to know the other night I was sitting in walked out in my front yard and I looked up and Leon Allen had told me that the brightest star in the sky is Saturn. And so I looked up and it was there. I mean, big old bright thing in the sky. And so I brought Andy out and I said, look at this. Leon told me that the brightest star in the sky is not Saturn, Jupiter, is Jupiter. I mix Saturn up because the twins are talking about Saturn all the time. They love the rings of Saturn on stuff. Anyway, is Jupiter. And my son looked at me and goes, Dad, Jupiter's not a star. And I said, thank you very much, Mr. Science Boy, for reminding me of that. I actually knew that, but it looks like a star, okay? It's the brightest object in the sky that looks like a star is Jupiter. And I stood there and just watched it. And Lan was telling me that through a telescope, you could actually look at it and you can see the moons around Jupiter right now as it's in the sky. I got to thinking, I don't know what the star in Bethlehem was, or the star of the Christmas story is, but I can imagine something new like this inspiring these men to go see Jesus. But I sat there and watched it. And this was kind of in, I mean, I knew this was the direction the sermon was going. I sat there and looked at that and went, okay, that's amazing. And as amazing as that is, all that does is tell me more about my Creator, the one who spoke and that light came into existence. The beauty of creation, if you go to Grand Canyon, you do not stand on the edge of the Grand Canyon and go, how important am I? Look at me. You look at Grand Canyon, you go, wow, this place is something that is awe. It just strikes me deeply. But then if you really get what the Bible's teaching us about the story of creation, you go, and the value, the beauty of this is not about that. It's about the one who made it. There is something amazing. And the Bible's trying to say is created by him, through him. And so, the Bible also tells us it's created for him, that everything finds its purpose in God. And literally, it's for God that you, me, everything in creation was created to demonstrate, to reflect his glory, to know God and to experience him deeply. Everything in creation is for him. It's for God, the one who created it. And everything in all of creation, the story, the theme of creation is telling us this, that we as humans, we will not get it until we find our worth, our purpose, our value, until we find our owner in God, that we understand that I am his and my self-value, my self-esteem, and I use that word lightly, is not in that I am wonderful. My self-worth is in the fact that I am a created being from the master creator. He made me and he loves me. And I understand that my purpose is to go to him, to live for him, that I am living for his glory, his purpose. We will not experience the beauty of creation in our lives until we get that. And the creation story is telling us this. That is the grand narrative, the big story of the Bible. In verses 26 through 28, he makes humans. Look at this. It says, "Then God said, let us make man in our image and our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image, and the image of God he created him, male and female he created them. And God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the heavens, and over everything living thing that moves on the earth." That God, instead of speaking now, God gets into the dirt and forms. And in chapter 2, something amazing happens. As God says, let us make man in our image. God who eternally exists in Trinity, God the Father, God the Son, God the Spirit, one God, three persons, a mystery. But God is always living in relationship with the Trinitarian Godhead. And out of the relationship and the glory of the Godhead, God says, let us make Adam, Eve, you and me in the image of God. And he forms Adam. And in chapter 2, it tells us that he takes Adam and he literally breathes the breath of life into Adam's nose. That what happens in Adam's life is something totally different than what happens in the life of the deer or the duck or whatever animal you want to choose. That there is literally the breath of God, the Spirit of God filling the person. And that's what gives them life. God makes Adam and Eve and he puts them in a garden and they walk with God in the cool of the day. And chapter 2 is one of the most beautiful pictures of humanity as it pictures the way humanity should be. And it's wonderful and it's glorious as they understand that they are God's, that their value is from him. They live in relationship with their creators. They walk with him in the cool of the day and they know that their purpose in life is to live for him. Now you need to know that in the midst of that, that's not the end of the story. There's gonna be a plot twist in chapter 3 that shows up everywhere else in the Bible. But the Bible never leaves this theme. The theme of creation is everywhere in the Bible. And what happens is, I told you that every chapter, every verse, every theme, there is in the backdrop a baby crying in the manger. Well, where this shows up is, you need to realize that the Bible is going to teach us really, really clearly that the amazing miracle, the amazing mystery, the crazy idea is that baby that seems to be a helpless baby that we sing to, that we do Silent Night to, that we celebrate Christmas because of, that baby is the one who did this. That baby is the one who threw the stars into space. That baby is the one who said, let it be, and it was. That baby is the one who created everything. John chapter 1. In John chapter 1, verses 1 and 2, it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. And verse 3, it says, everything that has ever been made was made by Him. Here in the text, the idea of the Word is a picture of Jesus. John is talking about the person of Christ, and he says, in the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God. He is God. It's interesting. He was God. He was with God. Trinitarian. And all that was made by Him. Colossians chapter 1 says this, verses 13 to 7. He, meaning Jesus, has delivered us from the domain of, God has delivered us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of His beloved Son, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by Him all things were created. Hear that? By Him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All things were created through Him and for Him. By Him, through Him, and for Him. And He's before all things, and in Him all things hold together. Do you hear what the writer of Colossians is trying to communicate to us? He's saying, here's Jesus who came and He redeemed us. And that Jesus who came and redeemed us, that baby who was in the manger, who is the center of the Christmas story, is the one, everything was created by Him, through Him, and for Him. When we say in Genesis 1, in the beginning God, you need to understand that the baby in the manger, one and the same. That is amazing. That is beautiful. And when we celebrate Christmas, you need to know that there is something amazing. It's not just a cute little story about a cuddling baby to sing to at Christmas. That the theme, the glory of creation, is all in that person. God who became human. Now, that's the beginning of the story, but there's a really interesting thing that happens in the wise men story. So you know the wise men, you know, if you know the story, it's the idea of these Eastern, probably astrologers, see a star. And out of a belief that they held that when you saw a new star, it represented a new king, a new world leader that was probably born, that had come. And so they begin to follow this star. And it ends up, they end up in Israel. And as they walk through Israel, they end up in Jerusalem. And they want to know where the promised king of the Jews would be born. And they were told by the prophets or by the priests that the baby was supposed to be born in Bethlehem. We heard that verse this morning in our Advent reading. And so they go to Bethlehem, a little bitty shepherd town about 6 miles outside of Jerusalem. And they find a house where there is a baby. And they come in, they lay gifts at His feet, and they worship Him. But in the context of that story, there's in verses 1 or 2, it says this. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, who is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. And if you just read through that and you're not paying attention, you don't miss the irony. You will miss the irony. Because you read that, what you hear the wise men saying is, we saw a star that was for Jesus. It's His star. He owns it. He made it. Its purpose is wrapped up in Jesus. The irony is that when they say His star, it's so much more than just a star that was kind of pointing us to Jesus. The irony that I think Matthew's trying to help us see is Jesus made that star. Jesus owns that star. that star finds its fullness, its purpose, its glory. And when you look at the star, it's not the star that should bring you awe. What should bring you awe is the one who made it. Wow. We saw his star in the east. And so here we are. And I just want to let you know that the beauty of the story is that that story is your story. That story begins with the fact that you are created by God, for God, for his purpose, to demonstrate the majesty of his character. He created you for himself. He owns you. And Jesus, our lives are literally his. There is an imprint on who you are that says belongs to Jesus. But not only does he own you, you were created your value, your worth is in the fact that he made you. And when you begin to feel down in the dumps, you begin to feel like life doesn't make sense, you begin to just see what feels like the worthlessness of your own life, don't run to, well, look within, self-esteem, I got to feel better about me. Run to Genesis 1 and realize the glory of creation and the beauty of the Creator and the fact that your value comes not in who you are, but in who made you. But then realize that your purpose is in him. Living for what he calls you to do, to live with him at the center of your life, to live a life of worship. And that's not just singing, that's that my life centers on him. And what's really interesting is as you read the Bible, when God speaks, everything else in his creation does exactly what he asks, except us. But that's the next theme, okay? And the call for you, for us today, is to go, man, I get this. I live for the purpose, the glory, the wonder of God, that there's something beautiful here. And that as you hear the echo of the baby crying in the manger this holiday season, don't miss the fact that that baby made Jupiter. That baby made the animals that are around him. That baby made the tree that was cut into planks of wood that formed a manger that held him. Wow. Now here's the deal. Our goal during this is not just to inspire you and challenge you to think differently about the big story and to see in this Jesus, but it's to begin to help you to share that story. Because we have a story to tell, and that story is amazing. And we've done something for you that we want to do. And we've got some youth that are helping us out this morning with this. They're going to come around to you, and you're going to get two things, okay? And they go together, all right? They go together. And every sermon, we're going to come back and say, all right, here's the point of the story. Two things. The first is a booklet called The Story. Yeah, that's the title of our series, by the way, just so you know, okay? The Story. And the booklet has several pages that takes each of these themes that we are talking about and explains how the Bible unpacks it. So like, if you open it up, and I know you can't see this, but as you get one, you'll see it. The first page here, there is a green page that says, how did it all begin? Creation, okay? And then it talks about God, that it all begins with God, that God created everything, it's beautiful, and it lived in harmony like it was created to live, and that's the beginning of the story, okay? This page, okay, there's something there that just explains in short form what I just tried to unpack to you in longer form, that this is God's world, that he created it. And then it's going to go through the other themes, what went wrong, how is it solved, the rescue, and it uses the exact same order that we are using, creation, fall, rescue, restoration, okay? Part of our goal is to help you understand these themes in a better way so that if you can have conversations with people, you'll be able to unpack it more, okay? Now, the second piece is just a once-folded piece that has the same thing. But here's the idea, okay? You ready? In fact, I'm going to pause and let everybody get it. All right, we got them? Getting close back there. By the way, do you like our Christmas trees? Get the story idea of it? My daughter and my wife made those. I just want to point that out. I thought they were really cool. All right, that was free. All right, everybody got one? All right, here's the big idea. The book is for you to give away. What we want to challenge you and encourage you, we bought 200 and I will order more tomorrow if we need them. Steven's got the box. He's going to take it and put it out there in the foyer as soon as the service is over. And if you want to grab a stack, if you want to grab 100, grab 100. The big idea here is you're going to take this one and give it away to somebody. Somebody, give it in a Christmas gift, hand it to somebody, give it to somebody you work with, give it to a family member. But the idea is that you give this one away. This one here is a cheat sheet for you so that when you give this one away, if you want to have a conversation with somebody, this gives you a cheat sheet to follow the idea. And so throw this one in your purse, in your back pocket, in the top of your truck, dude, guys, if you have a truck or a car and you just slide it in your visor somewhere. And when you have a conversation, you can just go grab this and go, hey, man, let me tell you. And it's just really easy. See how it says creation, the fall, the rescue, restoration, has a neat little outline there for you to follow to tell the big story of the Bible. And so our idea here is that we want to make these available. As we talk about these story, we don't want it to stay here. We want people in Eureka and people around St. Louis and friends and family and all that to hear this message and to know that the little story of Jesus, not a little story, but the story of Jesus is part of a bigger story. But God's desire is that that story is also your story. And our hopes this holiday season is that, first of all, you'll get it. That I need my story to be creation, fall. Yes, I'm fallen. But rescue and restoration. That Jesus rescues me and restores me, makes my life new, different, changed, growing. But not only that, that you will have friends and neighbors who hear the same message. Okay? Now, so take all these you want. We're going to watch it, and as soon as they're down, I'll order more. They get them here in about 2 days. We'll have them all Christmas season and may just keep them forever because I think it's a good little piece, a good little thing to just talk to people. And we want to share this message with people. So take all you want. But we also have one other thing for you that is kind of in the same idea. I got a card up here. I know you can't see it, but you'll see them out there in the foyer. It's a cute little card that says, Joy to the World, the Lord has come. But then it's got information about a Christmas Eve service. And so pick these up by the stack out there too and hand these out. Just invite people to come Christmas Eve. Our Christmas Eve service is really laid back. It's a family service. But our theme is going to be to retell this story again. Our theme for Christmas Eve is going to be talk about Jesus. We're going to use the Christmas story, but to say God's story is creation, fall, redemption, restoration, or rescue, restoration, and we hope that'll be your story this Christmas too. So it'll be a really good service to say, hey, I got a friend who doesn't know Jesus. They're going to be in town. Will you just come hang out at Christmas Eve? We're going to sing a lot of songs, do a lot of fun stuff, and it'll be worth it. So take stacks of these. Take all of these you want, but start using this Christmas season as a time to tell this story, share this story with others, because it is the great story. It's better than Elf. All right? I'm gonna pray, and we're gonna sing to Jesus, because he is the one who is the hero of the story. We're gonna worship him and celebrate him. And as we sing to Jesus, we will take up offering this morning. If you're a member of Genesis, part of our church, this is the time for you to give back. If you're a guest, this service is a gift to you. We do not want you or ask you to give, but this is the way we worship as we are here, by giving back to God because he's given so much to us. So I'm going to pray and we're going to do that. Lord, we thank you today for the story and especially the part of creation that tells us, Lord, that everything that is came from you and that our value and our purpose and our meaning and our hope in life is all wrapped up in the fact that you made us and love us so much. In your name I pray, amen.